Okay, good morning. It's Henry Harris, and it is Thursday, July 11th. Welcome to another installment of the weekly Amuna Teleform. Today's topic is how simple solutions become visible with a non-judgmental mind. And of course, the opposite is true. How simple solutions are invisible to a judgmental mind. Okay, that's today's topic, but we begin with a review of what is this call about. This call is a conversation about the underlying truth of Emunah, and in particular, how the psychological ramifications of Emunah play out, how the implications of Emunah inform our experience of life, our felt experience of life moment to moment, and how significant that is in having a truthful and accurate understanding of what's going on and how to navigate our lives based on that. So what do we mean? Well, Emunah, the basic underlying premise of Emunah is that there is a single powerful creator who is responsible for everything there is. There is nothing outside of the purview of the creator. There's no force, there's no power independent of the creator. Everything is completely and wholly dependent on the creator. And that means to say that not only the energy that animates the circumstances of our lives, the neighbors that we have, the traffic that we interact with, the timing of various events that we encounter during the course of our day, but not only that, even our capacity to experience the world, our felt experience, our psychological landscape, is something that is being managed and guided and animated by the Creator. That means to say that on a simplest level, the way that I see this and feel this is that I have moods, I have different states of mind. I have different states of mind that I personally am not able to control in the direct sense. Like, in other words, I don't know how to turn on a good mood. I don't know how to soften an agitated mood. However, the good news is that what I found is that I don't need to do that in order to live a lovely life. I don't need to be in control over my moods. What's most helpful to me is an understanding of what's true about my moods. So to the degree that I misunderstand my moods, what that would look like would be, and this would be a misunderstanding of Emunah, this would be a lack of Emunah, to the degree that I misunderstand, I might associate a mood that I have with some circumstance in this world, with my child's struggles, or my disagreement with my wife, or the lack of results that I found in a certain effort that I made in my work or in some other fashion. I might associate my discouraged mood or my upset mood or my stressed mood with something in this world, or even for that matter, myself is a part of this world. Like, in other words, I might associate my stress or my difficulty with there being something emblematic about me, some imperfection, some fundamental flaw that requires fixing. The mood I'm in is evidence of, you know, XYZ problem in the world or in me that's real, that's fixed. As compared to a different understanding of a different and more accurate understanding of how Emunah informs and shows up in my moods is the understanding that my moods themselves are being shaped by the source, the single source. The single source of divine energy that animates everything. So here I am, I'm finding myself in a state of agitation or a state of stress, or alternatively in a state of peace and good feeling. To the degree that I understand that I'm being shown something, that there is only one way in which anything is created, including my psychological experience, that there is a landscape inside of me that is being fashioned moment to moment by this divine energy, then I can distinguish between the world out there or anything of this world as being independent of my mood. My mood is being shaped, my feeling state, my state of mind is being shaped by the one source. Now, that doesn't mean that, again, I have control over that feeling state or that mood. It just means that I have the capacity to look at it with clarity. I have the capacity to look at it with an accurate understanding. That is emunah. That is a tremendous accomplishment, to know what is true. Even if you feel agitated, even if you feel the full feeling of stress and displeasure, nonetheless, to have even an inkling of what is true about that is an extraordinary accomplishment. Extraordinary. I mean, really, really an extraordinary spiritual accomplishment. It is a mitzvah unto itself. So, first of all, it is success to know what is true. Now, secondly, aside from the fact that it constitutes success, it happens to be, as we know, the Torah says, Darcheha darchei noam, its ways are the ways of pleasantness, v'chol nesivoseha shalom, and all of its pathways lead to peace. When a person lives in a clarity about how this world works, then it's impossible that he will not become aligned with the deeper peacefulness that is the emblem of this world, the deeper truth that is suffusing this world. It's impossible. So we have good news. We have good news in that we can be highly successful human beings. We can be highly successful Jews, no matter what feeling state we're in, simply by our capacity to turn in the direction of what do I know is true, to orient ourselves to being truth seekers over feeling seekers. Being a feeling seeker is a thankless job, because it's not really our job to do, as far as I understand. You know, I don't know how to get the feeling I want, and it sends me on a job that just, it revs my engine and it just keeps me running after what is ultimately something that's not in my hands, and it just wears me out. But being a truth seeker, that I can do, no matter what feeling state I'm in, I can be a truth seeker. And then simultaneously, as we said, it's impossible that it won't align me with the simplicity that is really the emblem of all of existence, the simple truth that is our Creator informing every moment of this world and every moment of our experience. So that's what this call is about, the exploration of this truthful understanding, the way that the Torah is illuminating the nature of reality and how we can align ourselves with that reality, independent of how we feel in any given moment, prioritizing our love of the truth, our love of what is real, over our love of a feeling in a given moment. Okay? Now, of course, what's interesting is that the more we see this for ourselves, the more freedom we have to be with discomforting feelings in ourselves, the more respect and compassion we have for the human phenomenon of unpleasurable feelings, and the more helpful we can be to others in their dealing with unpleasant and discomforting feelings, because our capacity to see the okayness of it, our being unruffled by it, it can only come from a deeper appreciation of this truth that it's unpleasant and I have compassion, but I also have respect for that humanity. There's nothing wrong, you know. That's what is a beautiful outcome of this. Now, if you'll excuse me for just 10 seconds, I'm going to turn on the air conditioner in the room that I'm in because I'm a little warm, so I'll be right back. Hold on. Okay, there you go. See, I was having an experience of discomfort, and I had this tremendous insight. Hey, go turn on the air conditioner. Okay, so today's topic is how simple solutions become visible to a mind that is non-judgmental. What do I mean by that? So I'll share with you a simple story. This is where sometimes these insights show up, is just, you know, what it is that I want to talk about. We see things that we encounter things during the week, and the Almighty has a way of sharing with us understanding and insight that becomes fresh. So I want to share with you a little bit of where and how I saw something familiar but fresh. I was talking with a gentleman who I'm working with these days, he was conveying a difficulty that he's been having at work, that he has a tendency to surf the net. He can get his job done in a relatively succinct amount of time, but he could end up spending quite a bit of time on the net, just, you know, looking around at things. And we're not talking about inappropriate things. We're just talking about his sensitivity to the fact that, you know, there are long-term goals that he could be tackling, but they're not urgent. There's no deadline on them. But he feels a sense of, you know, he's uncomfortable with his sense of irresponsibility, of his taking a wage for less than a full day's work. So I was listening to him and I said, you know, as far as I can tell, it's a pretty universal phenomenon that when people are faced with a choice between effortless distraction or, you know, kind of effortful work, it's just human to kind of incline toward the effortless distraction. Perhaps you could just help yourself out by installing a filter in your internet. So he said, no, I can't do that because there's like an internet network at work and I can't install something on my computer. So I thought, huh, that's interesting. Well, then, okay, if you can't install like a filter, perhaps you could just, you know, because I could see he was sincere about wanting to overcome his own bad habit and he was willing to look at it on some level. So I said, well, why not? Maybe there's a way to get some kind of a report that your internet usage generates, and simply the realization that someone could view that report would probably give you a pause before spending time on things that you know are not, you know, work related. And he said, well, and I said, you know, perhaps your supervisor could receive this report. So he says to me, well, I am the supervisor. So I thought for a second, and we both paused, and then something showed up. And then he said the following. He said, you know, that's interesting. I'm struck by what you said before about the fact of how kind of universal it is that when people are faced with the option of effortless distraction or, you know, effortful work, that people are likely to choose the effortless distraction. I didn't look at it in those terms. I could probably go to HR and request of them some kind of a tool that would assist in, you know, for the sake of productivity. In other words, I don't know exactly what he's talking about. I don't know exactly what the technical, you know, thing he's discussing, but something shifted in his outlook, and here's what I saw in his words. And he said this explicitly. He said, when I was first presenting to you the difficulty that I'm having, I kind of associated it with like a bad habit of mine that is somehow unique and kind of yucky. You know, like I've got this weakness and I don't know what to do about it, but I can tell that it's not exactly, you know, very good. So in the face of that perception that he was dealing with some kind of a yucky habit that was personal, he didn't see something, you know, he didn't see anything for that matter. Then when he paused and he reflected and he took in the idea and he had an insight, I said the words, but of course it wasn't my words that produced the difference. He had an insight in response to the comment I shared. You know what? That is true. Like, it is pretty much a universal phenomenon that it's like if there's an innocence, it's human, that people are going to, if you have right in front of you the option for effortless distraction or the option for hard work, yeah, of course it's human that people are going to incline toward that. And of course it could be a help to them if there was some kind of HR implementation. And it has nothing to do with me, per se. The moment that he saw the universal quality to that, the human aspect to that, bang, like something opened up and it was like, yeah, right, I could go to HR. Now, this is to me such a a beautiful example of how the human design is meant to work. Like, I've talked about this on many occasions, and I'm never tired of seeing this. Like, it's just always fresh to me how designed it is that human beings encounter something missing, something lacking, some area of, you know, obstacle. It's just so human that we run up against, you know, some aspect of, like, something's not working or something's missing. And what's amazing is that it's by design that we should encounter that. And then it's by design that with a certain understanding, with a certain appreciation of the humanity that we occupy, that we then discover something new. We discover a path forward. It is just so healthy and human to encounter a lacking and then to encounter some new thought, new possibility, some solution. It's true in our work life, it's true in our parenting, it's true in our marriage, it's true in our own personal navigation of our own choices, etc. And but the alternative is to encounter something missing or lacking or obstacle like in our life, and then to get personal and judgmental about it. To the degree that it looks to us personal and worthy of a judgment, like, what's wrong with me that I do this? What's wrong with me that I can't seem to overcome this, that, or the other? The moment that we lose sight of the human dimension of that missing quality, like the phenomenon of things being missing as part of the human experience. You know, limited visibility is a part of our human experience. That's all there is. All there is limited visibility. There's no fundamental flaws that it's true we can make destructive choices with limited visibility. It's true that we can do things that are unhelpful to ourselves and others that then require a response, doing tshuva, right? There's such a thing as consequences to our unhelpful and lack of visibility thinking. But the problem what accounts for our unhelpful or destructive choices is always a lack of visibility. And there is nothing more human than encountering lack of visibility or misunderstanding, that when we personalize it, when we get caught up in it as being, that's me, and I've got this problem, Joe doesn't have this problem, Sally doesn't have this problem, I have this problem, then we fill up. We fill up with a busy mind, with a mind that whirs and churns, how can I change myself? How can I fix this? How can I fix this? Which is all looking in a direction of misunderstanding. It's all looking in, there's something of this world, there's something of me that is real, fixed, that's accounting for my difficulty, my struggle. No. It's a state of mind. It is a lack of understanding. It's a lack of visibility. And there's only one source to everything, to all thought that is constricted, to all thought that is expansive. A state of mind in which I find myself, or if I find myself like this gentleman, wasting time and noticing that I'm wasting company resources by surfing the net, and I start to feel uneasy about it. I don't like the fact that I'm wasting time. I don't feel responsible doing that. I can look at that as like, hey, I'm an irresponsible guy. Let me look for evidence as to all the places in my life where I've been irresponsible. How shameful, how yucky that is. How am I going to overcome my yuckiness? That's the misunderstanding. That's the perception that that my experience is coming from something in me, from something that is definitive about me. No. You and I are a live feed of divine energy. We have a wondrous, miraculous capacity to turn our attention. We have the power of free will. We have the capacity to choose to acknowledge as this live feed flows through us, oh, look at me, I'm engaging in unproductive and irresponsible behavior right now. That would suggest that I'm standing in a certain confusion, a certain misunderstanding, that it feels right to me to waste time. It feels right to me to escape from responsibility. What do I know about that? I'm experiencing a flow of energy that is constricted, that's insecure, that is, it's a divine energy that I'm standing in. It's not me. It's something that I am tasked with encountering, with experiencing. And now I have the opportunity to know what's true about it. That's my first job, the beginning of all wisdom. Reishis Chochma Yiras Hashem. The beginning of all wisdom is to know what is true. What's true about God? What's true about the world in which all there is God? I am encountering something that is a universal human phenomenon called insecure energy. That's it. Now, I'm not happy with what I'm doing with it, but at least let me acknowledge the truth about it. And that's where this gentleman was able to discover, oh, right, like, everybody's dealing with what I'm dealing with. I should probably get help, you know? That's the willingness to get help with a challenge is itself an indication of wisdom. It reflects a certain wisdom state of mind. So here he is. He's open to the idea. Hey, HR, I have this difficulty where I see I tend to waste time, and I suspect that others might have that tendency too. A person who stands in that place of recognition, like, how in the world would HR say to him, oh, you're so, really? You have that problem? We're going to report you to the big boss. No. There's such dignity in such an outlook. There's such a humanity there. There's such a responsibility in kind of sensing, oh, I'm capable of acting in ways that are not constructive, and so is everyone. And that's true about every area of our life. It's true about every area of our life that when we personalize our problems, I'm encountering a difficulty with a child, it looks and feels so personal, like it can't, you know, it's not visible to us, but who else has these difficulties? This is me, this is my kid, it's so, you know, and then our mind just gets busy. It just gets busy. Now, I'm like all of this understanding should be taken with the realization that I'm not giving you a technique. I don't know how to do this as a technique. Like, go into non-judgmental mode when you find yourself judgmental, or when you find yourself caught up in upset, busy, stuck, just go to non-judgmental. I'm not saying I'm offering a technique. I'm simply describing a truth that you and I have all encountered, that the place to look for solutions is not in the judgment. It's not in there's a feeling that we can become tuned into that kind of, it's like a cue, like, okay, I don't have the ability to escape this unpleasant feeling, but I can know what's true about this unpleasant feeling. And I can know that is the place where my work begins, to stand in this unpleasant feeling, knowing what's true. The solution won't come from kind of tackling it head on. The solution will show up on its own when a person, in its time, when a person senses insightfully that truth. So keep looking at that truth. Keep sticking with that truth. As I shared at the entrance of this conversation, we are interested in turning our attention toward being a truth seeker over a feeling seeker. The more we value and respect the truth, the impersonal, universal quality of this emunah understanding, the more we appreciate how the divine is reaching us, the less we'll be concerned about how we need to grab the divine. The divine is reaching us in all its ways and in all moments. Sometimes it feels one way, sometimes it feels another. It's that capacity to be simple and truthful about what's happening in our life. That's where solutions are going to show, and that's how we navigate. That's why emunah is so central to a Jew's life. That's why emunah is the the Talmud says, "Bacha vakuk vehemidon alachas." All the various prophets and sages came and located all the 613 commandments in a smaller quantity of main principles, on 13 principles, on 7 principles, on 3 principles, on 2 principles, and then finally Habakkuk came, the last of the prophets, and he said, you know, look, focus on the one true underlying principle behind everything, and you will navigate your life more successfully than in any other way. This emunah understanding is the primer for all the resources that we have at our disposal, for all the wisdom that the Almighty has endowed with us in us, that is so much greater than our personal mind. Okay, that's what I want to share this morning. It is such a pleasure to see and sense the presence of others on this call. And now I'd like to invite, if there's anybody who would like to share a thought, an insight, a comment, a question, the floor is open.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I have a question.
Yes.
So I've been really trying to understand Emunah lately more than I, you know, on a deeper level.
Okay.
And this is what's getting me. This is the confusion that I still have. When you read about when you have Emunah, like in Chovot HaLevavot, it would say when you have Emunah, you have peace of mind, tranquility of spirit, right? Like, so I'm not saying I'm on this high level of Emunah. Obviously, I'm not. But on a certain level, we're being told that if you have a certain level of Emunah, all these feelings that we don't like won't happen to you. In other words, you'll just coast through life. But I feel like I must be misunderstanding that, because I don't even know anyone that coasts through life without any bleep in the, you know what I'm saying? Like, even Rebbe Kanievsky, they said at a certain point she had to go on medication because she felt the suffering of Klal Yisrael so strongly that she couldn't handle it. And they did put her on an anti-anxiety. It's in her book. Or she didn't sleep sometimes when she knew there was a certain person waiting for a certain answer for a certain person. So she, I'm just going to feel like she definitely had to have had this Emunah that we're talking about that's in Chovot HaLevavot, like level 9.5. You know what I'm saying, Mike? You know what I mean? Yeah. As level. So like the 9.5 guy is the one that should be on this tranquil, peace, coasting through life. Nothing bothers him. No emotion of anxiety. But Rebbe Tinkanievsky didn't, maybe for herself she didn't have the anxiety, but we can't say she didn't have it because it's clearly written down that she did.
Right.
So I'm trying to understand that I might just have such a warped view of Emunah based on what I'm learning, and maybe I'm just misunderstanding what I'm learning.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. If I understood you correctly, you're saying that the kind of like the litmus test of Emunah would be a real peaceful, tranquil internal experience.
Right.
And yet it just, you know, so in other words, are you wondering, like, do people who encounter anxious or stress or upset feelings, does that mean that they do not have Emunah? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm thinking that I keep trying to get more Emunah so that I could feel a little bit safer or more trusting that Hashem knows what he's doing and there's nothing to worry about. Even if I feel worried, I could say it's a body. But in other words, I wouldn't have anything to really, which is that even possible? Because I feel like I might be misunderstanding the whole Emunah thing.
Well, you know, in that sense, what I'm hearing you say is that Emunah is a quote-unquote state of mind, right?
100%, yes.
Yeah. And now you and I know something about, you know, acquiring a state of mind or getting a state of mind. You know, how does that go? You know, like, let's get a happy state of mind right now. You know, good luck. You know, we know something about that. So on the one hand, Emunah is descriptive. There is a way of painting a picture of what Emunah looks like. Yeah, like a high level of Emunah looks and feels a certain way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there is the Emunah, the very real and valuable Emunah associated with the given kind of step you're at, the rung you're at on the ladder. You know, we are to the best of my understanding, we're kind of, what's the word? We're moving, you know, we're moving targets, right? In a given day, we're moving targets. We're standing at different rungs on the ladder in terms of our perception, in terms of our understanding. And then, of course, you know, we have the capacity to move forward in our lives whereby we can recognize, look at this, today these scenarios and circumstances feel this way to me. And it's I kind of noticed that a year ago these feelings, these circumstances felt different. You know, they felt more distressing or more, you know, anxiety producing. Like, that's interesting. I can see that I'm standing in kind of a new place, right? So it is true that emunah can be viewed as a kind of a target, like a vision of what's possible, what is a human being capable of, a very lofty level of consciousness that we read about, that, you know, King David, I mean, King David suffered extraordinary difficulties, and in the midst of his describing intense emotional pain, is deeply aware of God.
Right.
You know? And I think you and I have also probably had the experience where we've felt significant internal distress in a way that acknowledged and felt God's presence, and in a way that did not. I have had the experience of feeling, you know, encroached upon by significant stress, and yet somehow feeling like I'm being held. You know, like I'm like, I know that God is with me and I'm in pain. I know it, but I'm in pain. And then I've had the experience of being lost, where I'm just in pain and I'm just lost, you know? And then I wake up at a certain point, but in that moment of loss, where I lost control, I lashed out, I just, you know, escaped into something unhelpful. I've had experiences of that where my pain and distress was disconnected from an awareness of God. So, to me, emunah is, you know, we're on a journey, you know. We're on a journey to testify to the truth of God in every moment. And that's really all we have, you know. All we have is this moment's opportunity to acknowledge what's true. What's true about this moment. I don't, you know, personally, I don't want to be distracted too much by, wait, am I at this state of mind right now? Could I be doing, you know, this state of mind? Does he have this state of mind? Am I getting to that state of mind? I am confident that the place where things are happening is now. And he's going to watch and guard and guide. And he always has, you know, like, I mean, look at my life. I mean, I look at my life and look at your life, how he has, like we say on Yom Kippur, Hine kechomer b'yad ha-yotzer. We are like clay in the hands of a clay builder, whatever, you know, he's shaping us, he's fashioning us. He's driving the process, and I'm focused on how this moment being, I can be present to his shaping me. To me, that's the main emunah. The main emunah is, and of course it's helpful, like in anything, to like notice, oh, how, you know, how am I doing? Not as a judgment, but as a opportunity to reflect and notice, wow, look at my state of mind, you know, like I'm standing in an insecure feeling, or I can see that my life has gotten simpler in this area.
So would you say that, let's say sometimes you have, your mind is going, Hashem, I know you're doing this, I know you're there, and I accept it, but my stomach and my body is not following that thought. In other words, you're still a wreck, but your mind is clear. You know what I'm saying? So I keep thinking, if your mind is clear, your body should follow, but it's not happening that way.
No.
For most, not for me, not for anyone. You know?
That's right.
Anyone that I even work with or know. So I think I'm getting confused on that. My body's not following. In other words, my mind knows. Right to Hashem, right to, I accept 100%. I have no complaints, but my body is complaining.
Right. So, right. That's right. That's right.
So I keep thinking if that lack of emunah, I don't know, maybe it's not a lack. Maybe it's
right.
Just that's what it is.
Right. No.
Again,
it,
when
it,
you're
well,
listening to
yeah.
Kavod HaLevavot, it sounds as if your body would conform with your mind. That's what it sounds like.
That's a goal. That's a wonderful vision that is possible that we can know is available to a human being. It's just that we don't draw. It's like, you know, when the Almighty exposes us to tests. He exposes us to nisyonot, and the essence of a nisayon, of a test, is that we're not driving the process. We can
right.
know how a test works on a kind of a, you know, a beautiful philosophical level, but it doesn't change the fact that the test feels like a real test as we're experiencing it, and that includes the pain. That includes the pain that can kind of like, the pain is calling to us. Run away, you can't handle this, get out of here, run away, it's too much. You know, that's the pain that feeling is calling to us. And we have an opportunity to acknowledge, wait a second, you know, like, what do I know about that pain? You know, and that's what we do, by the way, for the people in our life that when we're helpful to them, you know, our child, when our child is in pain, rather than if we're in a clear place, if we're in a level of understanding, we don't try to get them out of their pain. We sit with them with love and compassion and understanding that their pain is their pain and it's okay to feel it. And there's, you know, really nothing that I need to do to fix them. I love them and I'm feeling their pain and trusting that I can be with them in this moment and so can they be in this moment. That's a gentle kindness that we do for others, and first and foremost we do it for ourselves. That's what the Almighty wants of us in that moment of pain, to trust in the dignity of that pain, to trust in the godliness of that constricted, it is a constricted state of mind, it is a lack of clarity, and it's by design, it's by divine decree that we encounter lack of clarity.
Right. It sounds like in Tanya, when he talks about the Beno need, where he says, if you don't want that feeling, then you think you're a tzaddik. But you know Tanya, yes? You've learned the book of Tanya,
or
no?
I'm familiar
okay,
with the Beno need.
So he talks about the Beno need is never going to get out of that feeling. It doesn't matter
That's
what
right.
his whose emunah is that he's never getting out of that feeling.
Beautiful.
Ever.
Beautiful.
So it sounds to me like maybe that is emunah, and maybe I'm thinking
yes.
that
yes.
I'm looking for the tzaddik level emunah, which that's not me, because I'm not
right.
a tzaddik yet. So on a Benoni level, you are going to have to feel it, but it doesn't mean
Beautiful.
You don't have emunah. Could be you have the highest level of emunah,
Beautiful.
But it doesn't mean you're not going to feel that. So maybe that's the answer. That sounds good. I like that.
Melissa, I love it. And you know what? It sounds like you're saying an answer that the Balatanya said. So if you're saying an answer like
yes,
the Balatanya said, I think you're in
said.
Good
yes.
company.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what he said in Tanya. Now that
right.
I'm thinking, I didn't think of Tanya before. I kept thinking of like Chavot HaLevavot, which wasn't separating out a Benoni to a Tzaddik. Chavot HaLevavot
yeah.
doesn't separate out a Benoni, but Tanya does.
Yeah, he's distinguishing that very clearly, and he's making it absolutely out, putting it out there that included in a holy life will be an ongoing inclination toward confusion, toward insecurity, toward struggle, included in a holy life. And that's really, you know, that's the whole conversation that I was looking to address today is the power and the blessing of seeing the humanity of that tendency, you know, depersonalizing it versus personalizing it. So much wisdom is built into us when we are not personalizing the struggle, and so
right.
much access to our kind of natural forward progress is available to us when we can glimpse the humanity of that struggle. And I love the way you put it. It's really beautifully illustrated.
Thank you. I we came to this together because I didn't come in with that insight. That was a real insight. Yeah, this was part of our, this was our avodah. This
Perfect.
Is our hishtabu.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I do. I see it much more clearly. I kept feeling like I'm doing something wrong. And it's funny, in Tanya, he says, if you're feeling like you're doing something wrong, then it means you think you're a tzaddik. But I didn't click with that.
Beautiful.
And he said you have to stay on the level of Benoni because most of us are that.
Yes.
And you can't think that you're going to get a level of tzaddik because tzaddikim are really born as tzaddikim. They're not born as Benoni and then they jump. They're born that way because Hashem
right.
made tzaddikim in the world.
Right.
So if I could remember who I am, then I think I could at least feel that I'm doing the job. You
yep.
know, I want to do the job. We all do.
Yep.
And we want
to
do it
right.
Well,
I just have to say, in my opinion, you're a great Benoni, even if you're not a tzaddik.
I'm definitely
even,
not a tzaddik.
Even if you're not a
tzaddik. On any level, no.
No, but thank God you are
yeah.
fortunate to understand something about the Benoni, which allows you a tremendous, an invaluable resource. You know that.
Yeah, that's good.
Think about what you can offer your children, knowing what you know about this Benoni idea. Think of what
right.
you have offered to your children, that you can
yeah.
stand in the understanding of the humanity of imperfection, of the design of that. It's like it's just it's so liberating.
It is. It does feel more liberating because at least you know where you stand. But if you think you're supposed to stand somewhere else, then it's hard because
yeah.
now you're not doing it right and you're missing
yep.
something and you're not getting, you know, you want to do the right thing. I think everyone for sure on this call does, or we wouldn't be on the call. And, you know, but we have to first know the job. And it's funny,
yep.
whenever I'm teaching, I always say, we got to know the job, but I didn't myself know the job. So
well,
so I feel much more clear now. Wow, this is really good. Thank you so much. This,
you know,
this
it reminds
is a necessary conversation.
By the way, this reminds me of so much of the refrain that we see in all the stories that we're reading about in Chumash, where the Jewish people flip out.
Yeah,
and the,
yeah,
and
yeah,
the underlying,
yeah.
like one of the underlying themes of their flip out is, we shouldn't be here. We should be somewhere else.
Somewhere else.
Like this is the
right.
wrong place. We should. Why did we ever leave? We should be back there. Why are we here? Right. That's what I'm
yeah,
hearing
yeah.
you say in the Benoni who thinks he should be a tzaddik. It's like, wait a second. This is the wrong life. This is the wrong
right.
experience. This is that is you know. That's the underlying mistake of our lives, is that we think, no, this moment is not where we should be. We are obviously in the wrong moment, you know? And, of course, the impossibility of that. But that's what we do. We're protesting the moment. We're protesting the moment as if there's a possibility of being in a different place or moment or, you know, in state of mind. It's this moment. It's this moment,
right.
and that is beautiful and human and so dignified to be in that moment.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Leroy is just chiming in. I just had an idea. If a tzaddik were to be a Benoni, how would he act?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So if a tzaddik was a Benoni, then he'd always accept whatever feeling was given to him. He'd always accept
beautiful.
It from Hashem.
Beautiful.
Right.
This is how
it's
it is.
True. You're right.
Oh, wow. That's
beautiful.
Really nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Thank God. Just came to me.
Yeah, that's powerful.
But everything you were saying before, Rabbi Harris, I resonate so much with me. I have a newborn at home, and when the baby's crying, I forget about, you know, did I take the diaper, did I feed them, this and that. And it's so helpful to have someone else there who could be like, oh, did you check the diaper? Like, on my own, I totally forgot about it. And I'm in, like, the state of, like, you know, a lot of stress and urgency, and it feels so nice to have, like, someone with visibility.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, first of all, Mazel Tov. You just had a baby?
Yeah, sorry. Yes.
There he is.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
May you have much nachas from that one and all your children.
Amen. Thank you. come in. Also, I wanted to share that there's a certain, I had for a while spoken in loose terms about, you know, one person who's really outside in terms, like making my life miserable, and it was a very big struggle. And I think Hashem like gifted me with like a major Yeshua, and I had this like extreme insight that has been so impactful that it's like I can move on. Like it doesn't even bother me as much as with the same like magnitude. So I'd like to just share the insight.
Please.
It was that basically that, and I'm sure it's nothing new to anyone else, but for me, it was something I need to see. But basically, it was that everyone is on a different level of like a mountain, and everyone sees a different view. And you know, for some reason, everything this person said, I would take extremely personally. And the chiddush was that what they're saying is only true for what they see. It's not true for my reality. And I was my misunderstanding was that I was accepting everything they were saying as if, like, they thought, as if I expected them, I expected that whatever they would say should be the exact refua and the exact thing that I needed, which how could I ever expect anyone to do that, because they don't stand where I stand and they don't see what I see. But I kept taking everything they were saying so personally, as if I expected that they should see what I see and they should know exactly what works for me. Then I realized that they're only saying what they're saying from the place of seeing what they're seeing, and what they're seeing is not what I'm seeing. It's not more or less wrong than or right than what I see, but it made a lot of sense. Like, how could I take what they're saying personally if they're just saying it from, they're just doing what makes them secure and what they see and what makes them do what they do, but it has nothing to do, like, if they could see what I see, then they would be acting and thinking just like me, but they don't, so they do other stuff.
Beautiful, beautiful. You know, it's a sign of, what I've seen is interesting. When I'm more receptive to and respectful and accepting of someone else's perspective in a way that I don't feel like, if someone communicates a value or something that doesn't sit with me, I don't view, you know, to the degree that it feels unsettling or threatening to me, it's kind of a sign that I'm not fully valuing the divine nature of the reality of a divine channel that I have access to. Like, in other words, and the converse is true. To the degree that I find myself able to sit with and listen to someone with whom I disagree and experience a kind of settled and peaceful feeling, that's an indication that I've been gifted with an appreciation of the whole idea of a divine channel. Like, I have such appreciation and respect for the idea of a divine channel that it's like, okay, well, that's, you know, we don't have the same chance. Like, I'm not putting it to words in the right way, because I don't know, it doesn't lend itself, as far as I can tell, to words, but you know, it's that feeling of peacefulness is an indication that you have definitely sensed there being a divine channel. And that's what I heard in your words. And the converse is true. The insecure, unsettled feeling is simply an indication that you're not sensing the divine channel. You're looking out, you're feeling like it's an outside-in experience, that circumstances, facts, this world is what's shaping your feeling state. And therefore you have a reason to want to manage the world out there in order to get the right feeling state. You know, when you've stepped out of that outside in, it's the greatest indication of that is that you can be in a whole set of circumstances or differences of opinion and still feel a comfort.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's going to be very appropriate for the period of time that we're coming up to, you know, as we get closer to the Churban Bayis in the 3 weeks, appreciating just how much the Golus that we're in is defined by our limited capacity to see more than a certain divine channel, you know. The appreciation, I think this goes back to what Melissa was talking about, like part of the Beinoni is the understanding that I have a limited perspective and that that is the nature of our exile, you know. But knowing that that's true allows me to navigate the exile responsibly as compared to, you know, being at odds with someone and just feeling like, well, they're wrong and they're upsetting.
When you use the term like about visibility, it makes me think about I went on a hot air balloon trip, and basically whenever you go on a hot air balloon, they have to do a test for visibility, because if you can't see, then the pilot is not going to be able to steer the hot air balloon. So it took a while, because they kept on trying to test it out at one location, and they really couldn't see what they needed to see. So they said, we have limited visibility, and, you know, everyone was disappointed. But they said, that's okay, we're going to try another location, and we're going to see if that can be better. And it happened to be that the second location was better, and then we had the trip. So, you know, first I wanted to say, like, oh, you know, when there's visibility, then you can soar. But that makes me think that maybe it's only good when you have visibility, like, I guess it shouldn't be such a disappointment when there's limited visibility, because then you could either maybe just look elsewhere or just kind of, it should be like it's neutral. It's not,
You know, that's the baby.
At the time of that trip, it's like everyone got disappointed, like, oh no, we're not going to have a fun time, we're going to miss the trip. And like, no, don't worry, everyone's coupons will be refunded if we don't go, don't worry. But, you know, there's always more locations to try, but in this situation, you know, when there's visibility, you can soar, and when there's limited visibility, there's nothing to groan about. That's just the reality, and maybe you'll find more visibility sooner than you expected.
Right, that's right. Sometimes the avoda is to be in motion. You know, is to. I don't know. We see. Sometimes the avoda is to experience this illumination and gratitude for illumination. Sometimes the avoda is to experience constriction and an acknowledgement of the source of that constriction. Those are both expected and healthy dimensions of our service of this world. As David HaMelech said, you know, he said, "Min ha-meitzar karasi ka," like that was from the narrowness I call to you. A big part of our life is the ability to acknowledge God and the truth of His love and reality in the midst of our constriction. You know, it's not a detour. It's not a flat tire. It is life.
Right, exactly. It's a reality without any negative undertones.
Yes. Yes. It is such a pleasure to be able to have these conversations. I so appreciate your input, your thoughts, your insights, and the opportunity to have a shared learning experience. I just have this feeling that we're kind of, you know, we can pause here. There's so much richness, so much collaboration and insight. So I think maybe we'll stop here. It's almost the hour. And I just want to take a moment to say good Shabbos to everybody and have a great week. And God willing, we'll speak next Thursday.